Hello, this is Rachi Lerner speaking with you today from OU Radio. We're continuing our discussion on memory, a key component to living a fully realized Jewish life. I'd like to start off by explaining what memory is, as it's understood psychologically. There are three different components to memory. There is episodic memory, which is best expressed and understood as "I remember when," that old column in the back of the Jewish Press by Arnold Fine. When we talk about, oh, I remember my bar mitzvah, I remember the wedding, I remember the birth of my first child, I remember a specific episode in my life, which is rooted in a very concrete experience in our past. That is episodic memory. We also have procedural memory. You learn how to ride a bike, right? You learn how to tie your shoelaces. You learn to boot up your computer and log into your email, right? You learn to do this. You learn a procedure. And what do they say? You never really forget how to ride a bike. You just got to go back on, and it kind of comes back to you. We even have muscle memory, where we train the parts of our body to remember how to do something. And then we have something known as semantic memory, which is memory that has meaning. It's sort of a shared world consciousness about memory. So we remember, for instance, the idea of justice. We have an understanding. We have a shared understanding of what it might mean. We remember a historical event, even though we did not experience it directly, like the Civil War, and we have sort of feelings about it that are triggered through that memory, through the meaning that we attach to it. So the semantic memory is cemented not by our own direct experience of it, but by an appreciation of what it has come to mean for us. But with all those categories of memory, what is most clear is that in all those categories of memory, we're talking about things that we have some direct understanding of, whether because we directly experienced it or because we have a sense of what it might mean. And it's still rooted in some sense in the past. Memory is always about, I remember past. Now we have this experience in Judaism where we're supposed to remember, Zecher et asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Zecher l'yitziat Mitzrayim. Remember the Exodus. Zecher l'maaseh b'reishit. Remember creation. But I, Rachi Lerner, as good as my memory is, cannot remember creation. I just don't have any recollection. I certainly don't remember Mitzrayim, and I never encountered the Amalek of the Midbar. I have encountered other Amaleks like Ahmadinejad, but I have not ever encountered the Amalek, the old one. So one idea of saying to me, remember, Schira, the idea of memory in Judaism, must have a completely different connotation. And the Rav has this beautiful idea that he develops. He calls it the ethics of memory. He says that Judaism does not subscribe to the idea of memory being rooted in the past. He says, in fact, that memory is experiential in nature. One doesn't simply remember the past, recollect what has happened, but a person instead re-experiences what has been and basically reinvigorates, revitalizes experiences that are seemingly dead. So what is it that's so important about that is because of that reason, if we're not talking about remembering a past event, but revitalizing, reinvigorating, giving new life, re-experiencing an event, we have a very different conception of what it means to recall. And how does he say it? He says many, many mitzvot are based on this fact. Bechol dar v'dar chayev adam lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim. Every single generation of person must see himself as if he himself had gone out of Egypt. How could he do that if he did not have experiential memory? If it was simply the recollection of past events, how could I feel that I went out of Egypt? It's because I put myself in the mindset. The word we use in philosophy is phenomenologically. I take myself and I experience the phenomenological experience of the person who went out. I put myself literally in their shoes. Experiential memory erases the borderline that separates past experience from present experience. It doesn't just remember the past, but it re-experiences what has been. Events that we would consider dead and long gone actually merge into the present time. The Rav, I've said this before in many of my shurim, takes great issue with the aphorism ha'avar ayin, the past is no more, v'ha'atid adayin, and the future is yet to be, v'ha'hove keheref ayin, and the presence goes by in the blink of an eye. He says that is so wrong. He takes great issue and exception to it. Ha'avar ayin, the past is no more. He says it's totally wrong. The past is still present, he says. In Judaism, we believe in a unitive time consciousness, a link between past, present, and future. The present connects the future and the past. How does that work? How does he fully understand that? So let's explore that a little bit more fully. He says the following. Both past and future are alive. Both act and create in the heart of the present and shape the very image of reality. From this perspective, we neither perceive the past as no more, nor the future as not yet, nor the present as a fleeting moment. Rather, past, present, future merge and blend together. And this new threefold time structure arises before us adorned with a splendid unity. How does that impact on us? So here's what he says. There are many different paths, according to this perspective, along which the cause can travel. He's looking at cause and effect. It is the future that determines its direction and points the way. There can be a certain sequence of events that starts out with sin, but ends up with mitzvot, and vice versa. The future transforms the thrust of the past. Let's talk about what that means. I can do an action in present time that can have the potential outcome of evil or the outcome of good. But depending on what I do in the future, that transforms the past. So even though it's been done, let's give an example. I go ahead and I inherit a tremendous amount of money or make a fortune. That money is earned in the past. But by what I do with it, I transform it. The future transforms the past. If I take that money and I build a Mossad of Tzedakah, I build a Tzedakah institution. Wow, my future actions has transformed that into a positive act. The past is utterly transformed. If I go ahead and I use that to go ahead and do things that are contrary to Torah thinking or just do hedonistic issues, what have I done? I've made that event either neutral or negative. What do we do? It's what I do in my future that changes. The future imprints its stamp on the past and determines its image. And that is the entire thing of when we talk about tshuva, the entire essence of tshuva. Repentance, by definition, means I reflect upon the past, I create an image in the future, and I change my behavior. I don't sit there and say that past is firm and fixed. By doing tshuva, I change my past. I transform it into a force for good. That's what we do. We have this notion. Otherwise, how could we even have the concept of tshuva? How could we even believe in a concept of tshuva? Because there's no going back. But because I have the ability to go and see what I've done, repent of what I've done, I can change the thrust of the past. I can change its impact. I can change what it means to me and how it impacts on the rest of my life. So looking at that as a form of memory, how does this tie into what we're trying to understand right now? What we're trying to remember? And so the Rav says to us, how is it that a person can regard himself? We say, behold, dor v'dor chayav adam lerot et atzmo ki lehu yatzah mimitzrayim, that a person has to look at himself as if he himself left Egypt. How do we do that? So he says the following. A person cannot regard himself as one of those who left Egypt unless he includes himself in that past and he includes himself in the geula that happened. The redemption from Egypt, he says, is not just a past event when we say Zecher li Yetziat Mitzrayim. He says this is an event that is linked to the future geula. What do we say? We basically say we talk about on Yontif, we talk about on the Chag, when we recite the Hallel on Seder night, we talk about the future, the Messianic age, the Melech HaMashiach, the time when there will be a Geula. The Geula of the past is inexorably linked with the Geula of the future, the final Geula. When we think about it, when we remember, we enact a promise of a new future. That is what we're looking for. When we remember Amalek, we're remembering that there's a battle that we will wage against every wicked individual until the coming of the Mashiach. We will be fighting Amalek through time. All of time. That is how we remember him. There is an everlasting message, not just in past recollection, but in terms of the future. We are to remember it until the future when Amalek is utterly eradicated, because Amalek will only be eradicated when God is ever present in man's awareness, when man all over the world embraces God. And the Geula that is embodied by Yetziat Mitzrayim, where we were born as a nation, will only be fully realized in the final Geula when we are established firmly and fixedly as the nation of God in Eretz Yisrael with a Mikdash. That is how we understand it. That is our complete understanding of what it means to be Nig'al. Why must we, though, as part of Judaism, remember so much of the negative? Why is so much of our experience Zecher et Asher Asalach Amalek? Why must we remember the downsides of our experience? Why must we remember Shibud Mitzrayim, the enslavement, the servitude? Why all the pain? Why must we remember the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? And the Rav has a very beautiful thought about it. He says, when you choose to forget, to repress any negative or disturbing thoughts, something extremely terrible happens. You have wasted the experience of those catastrophic events. Any catastrophe that happens to us, either individually or collectively, has a message for us, has meaning, has purpose. And if we disown that, what do we say? We are wasting the catastrophic disclosure. I'd like to read to you the words that he uses because they're very powerful. He says, do not disown the passional encounter with God. Instead of rejecting it, assimilate the remembrance of suffering into the all-embracing existential awareness. It's an extraordinary thing. He says, do not disown pain. Do not disown suffering. Embrace it. Integrate it into your being, into your consciousness. Why? Because if you don't, if you try to escape, he says the following, that would amount to wasting the catastrophic disclosure, to an admission that God was absent from the whirlwind that thwarts man's drives and dreams. In consequence, man would, after meeting God in the whirlwind, return to his routine, which operates exclusively at the level of affirmation, refusing stubbornly to relate itself into the negation. What is he saying? If you meet God in the whirlwind and then you say, it never happened, I disown it, the entire experience of pain is wasted on you. Your life is meant to be informed by every experience, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that is why we have at the close of the Zechira of Amalek, the words, Lo Tishkach, forget not. Let the passional experience always be the other pole toward which the experiential pendulum swings from time to time. Never forget your pain, because your pain is your teacher. It allows you to meet God completely and wholly. And what the Rav says is there are two specific mitzvot that really address this idea of the passional experience, the experience of suffering. Number one, that you should remember that you were a servant in the land of Egypt. Zachar ki eved hayita be'eretz Mitzrayim, you should remember that you were a servant, and you should remember what Amalek did to you. And what is it that we're supposed to learn from the affliction of Egypt? What is it we're supposed to learn from the pain that Amalek foisted upon us? We're supposed to learn from the event of our affliction in Egypt about Jewish ethos, about ethics, about the idea that we have an understanding of the trials and tribulations of the stranger, that we have a keen sense of justice and fairness, that we dislike brutality and hardship, that we eschew the idea of slavery and servitude. We believe in human rights. We believe in people being treated with dignity and respect. We demand equality for ourselves and for others. Very often in Tanakh, when the Torah is trying to teach us an ethical norm, a way to behave, teaching us an ethical imperative, it uses the experience of Egypt to say to us, don't forget about the plight of the strangers, because you were a ger in the land of Mitzrayim. You were a stranger. Don't forget what it's like to be enslaved. Don't forget or don't deny the experience of a slave or a servant, because you yourselves were servants in the land of Egypt. The ethical experience, the ethos of a people, is born out of its pain and its suffering. And that is true as well about Amalek. We learn from the experience of Amalek about not giving in to preying on weaker people, about not wanting to create pain for others. This is what we ask from them. Now, it's interesting for us as well. What is it about Amalek that is a key lesson? And Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardozo gives us a fascinating insight. He says, first of all, who is Amalek? And the Torah tells us that Amalek was the son of Esau's son Eliphaz. And Eliphaz had taken a concubine. Her name was Timnah, the sister of Lotan. And Timnah became pregnant and gave birth to a son, Amalek. And the Talmud asks the question, why did Timnah marry Eliphaz? And it gives us this extraordinary statement that Timnah had decided that she wanted to become a Gioret, and she went over to Abraham, to Yitzchak, and to Yaakov, but they would not accept her. So she went and she became a concubine to Eliphaz, the son of Esau, saying, I would rather be a servant to this people than the mistress of another nation. From her descended Amalek. And here's the extraordinary part of the Gemara in Sanhedrin 99, Tzadi Tet, Amud Bet, 99b. From her descended Amalek who afflicted Israel. Why? Because they should not have repulsed her. In other words, she had wanted to become a Gioret. She had gone to Abraham, to Yitzchak, and to Jacob, and they said no. And so she went and became a concubine to Eliphaz, the son of Esau. Fascinating. So this Talmudic statement is hard to understand. After all, why would they not allow her to join the Jewish people? We don't really know. But we're told that because of something that they did, Amalek was born out of that, because of an action that they did wrong. We have a similar event with Hagar. Why the Ramban, Nachmanides, talks about, why is it that the Arab nations have sown so much anger and revulsion to the Jewish people? Because of what happened with Hagar. That Sarah sinned by being too hard on Hagar. This is the importance of understanding this event. What are we trying to understand from here? That memory of pain and suffering sometimes is causing us to look at our part, our culpability, in terms of our experience. We are sometimes the creators of our own destiny. When the Torah says, Timche et zecher Amalek mitachat ha-shamayim lo tishkach, where we're told, erase the memory, do not forget. And we have this paradox of how you can erase a memory if one is not allowed to forget what one did. The Torah is saying to us, remember the behaviors. Do not eradicate the memory of Amalek, but means eradicate the residue of Amalek that is inside of you. Here's his words. It may mean that we are obligated to uproot from within ourselves the ways in which our ancestors dealt with Amalek's ancestors. Do not forget, lo tishkach, that this behavior caused ongoing pain. The Torah is saying to us, remember the part that you play in your own experience. Do not forget that the behaviors that you showed then have impacted on you to this very day. Make sure not to forget so you never repeat the same error. People create their own enemies, and Jews must teach themselves and others to prevent this by all means. We need to be mindful of the role that we play in making memory a lucid and vital part of our lives. We need to do it when we look at painful events that have happened to us with Amalek, and we need to look at not only the life lessons to be learned, but lessons to be learned in terms of altering our own behaviors, and we need to see it in terms of the ethical imperatives that are born out of remembering the past of Yetziat Mitzrayim, how that informs our future, that we are to be ethical, caring, thoughtful, and giving human beings. Next week, we'll talk about other elements in the Pesach story, specifically chametz and matzah.